Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Here's the podcast from Middays with Susie Larson. Enjoy the conversation. It's only just a matter of Welcome to Midday. So glad to have you listening. I'm Susie Larson, and we look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heighten your awareness of His very real presence in your life. Well, recently I spoke with Stephen Kendrick. He's one of the Kendrick brothers. They write and produce some of my favorite films, like Facing the Giants, Courageous, Fireproof, War Room, and their soon-to-be-released film, Overcomer. Well, I had the chance to view the film early, and it is fantastic. Well, now my friend Chris Fabry, who is not only a national radio host, a gifted writer, he often writes novelizations of the films, and he's done so again with the film and the book Overcomer. We've got five copies of this gorgeous, amazing novel to give away today. Here's my question for you to chime into the conversation and enter the drawing. How have you overcome? Because of Jesus' work in your life, how have you overcome? 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Just want you to text, or you can email middays@faithradio.com. I'm getting an echo. middays@myfaithradio.com. Also, I've got a quick announcement before we hear from Chris Fabry today. We are giving away He Reads Truth Bible, gorgeous hardcover Bible, every single week for this month. All you have to do is register to win. Hop on our website at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. All right, let me tell you about my guest. We'll get him on the show. Chris Fabry is an award-winning author and radio personality who hosts the daily program Chris Fabry Live on Moody Radio. He's also heard on Love Worth Finding, Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman. He and his wife, Andrea, are the parents of, count them, 9 children, and we're so honored to have him with us today. Chris, good to talk with you again.
Same here, Susie. Thanks for having me on.
Well, congratulations on another fantastic book.
You know what? I just talked with my mom yesterday. My mother got, I sent this book to my mother, and my mother said such wonderful things. There must be something going on when she reads what I write and has good things. She said, the way that you put this, Chris, it's just, I felt like I was there. And I thought, well, if my 92-year-old mother can say that, then maybe I'm doing something right.
Indeed you are. And she's absolutely right about that. I'm telling you, I feel like every book you write gets better and better. Looking forward to digging into the content. And I've interviewed you enough times for you to know I love to start out by talking scripture. I wonder if there's a verse you've been hanging around these days you can share with us.
You know, there's one that kind of fits in with what we'll be talking about today and that whole thing of identity. And I have a couple of different ones. One of the, I love in Mark 6 when Jesus, you know, sends his disciples away and calms the waters, comes walking on the water. The miracle of that is that he got into the boat with them. So I keep coming back to that. But in Mark 10:21, there is this scene. I've been going through the Gospel of Mark. There's this scene of the rich young ruler who comes to him. And 7 words, Jesus looked at him and loved him. Wow. Jesus looked at him and loved him. And I keep coming back to that and back to who do I allow to define me in my life? Who am I going to believe about who I am? Is it my feelings? Does it come from inside of me? Does it come from outside of me? Somebody that cares about me, a family member or a friend or a pastor or what somebody says on the radio about me? You know, who do I allow to define who I am? And I keep coming back to this idea of the extravagant love, mercy, grace of God and what Jesus says about me, and I can trust what he says. Jesus looked at him and loved him. Do I really believe, and I've been writing about this in a different story here of late, but do I really believe if Jesus climbed up in the, you know, if he sat down in my room right now across from me or climbed in the car with me in the passenger side and sat down there and looked at me, would he love me? Would he look at me with love, or would he kind of, you know, shake his head and scowl and say, boy, you really messed it up this weekend. Your perspective on everything that's going on in the news with what happened in Dayton and with El Paso, you're really, you know, would he frown at me, or would Jesus look at me and love me? And I think that whole idea, you know, if you allow yourself to go there for a few minutes, and you think about the person of Christ, how did he go through with all the opposition that he had in his life and all of the frustration, these people who didn't get it? You know, he was just surrounded by people who didn't get it a lot of the time. Who did he allow in his humanity to validate him? It was the Father who said, "This is my beloved Son in whom I'm well pleased." When God looks at me, do I think he sees all the mistakes and the stuff that I've done, or do I think he sees the righteousness of his Son on me? And does he look at me in love and say, "This is my kid. I love," you know, you start down that road and you'll get to some good place or see where you've gotten off the track.
Boy, isn't that the truth? It's the crux of everything. We try to fill our lives upon so many other things. I think it's in Ephesians, it says, to know this love is to be filled with the fullness of God. We try to find it in all the wrong places, but it starts and ends with his love. And as you're talking, Chris, I'm also thinking of the passage where it says that we can come boldly into his presence and be assured of his glad welcome. Well, a glad welcome includes a smile on your face, that when you come into his presence, he's glad to see you. And I just think we don't ponder that quite enough, and I think it gets us into striving or constantly feeling like he's perpetually disappointed in us. And don't you think when you live under that shadow, you're going to make self-preserving decisions, reactionary choices, if you're not assured of his love?
Yeah, you sure will. And a friend of mine who's in missions now, but spoke at our church years and years ago, I still remember him. And he had struggles with depression and, you know, things that had happened to him in childhood. And he said, I think most of us feel like God is on the other end of a tightrope, looking at us, shaking his head, scowling with his arms crossed, thinking, going to mess up again, going to fall again. I just know this, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Instead of, it's not the other end of a tightrope, but a rope that is tied around us, and he's pulling, and he's, come on, you could do it. Come on, look at me. Look up at me. Just walk, take another step here. Just get a little further along. I'm right in a boat with you, you know? And if that's the vision that you have for how God is for you, it's going to transform the way that you live and the struggles that you have. You'll look at your struggles differently. This is how God is using your life, using the problems in your life to bring you further along with him, closer to his own heart. And that just transforms a life.
You know, this, I can't wait to get into the story, Overcomer. And so trust me, friends, this is leading to that. It seems that the enemy uses every painful circumstance in our life to do what he always does. Did God really say? Does God really feel? He brings into question the Father's love for us, but it's in those places where we contend with the truth and come out of it going, I have a firmer grasp. Hopefully we at least do come out with a firmer grasp on his love. Would you say that's true in your own life when you think of the ups and the downs and the twists and turns that you've endured? And you've endured a lot of them, Chris. I mean, can you point to some of those places going, this is where maybe the enemy brought it into question, but I emerged knowing on a deeper level the faithfulness of my Father?
Yeah, and don't you wish that Adam and Eve had a hatchet back there where they could have just done away with that snake that was, you know, not telling them the truth? You know, that's what I want. And then I have to look at the sovereignty of God and the love of God. And I have to agree with C.S. Lewis that the ability to walk away from him or deny him or spurn his love was his way of showing us what true love really is, that we have this opportunity to respond to him or not. And that was, you know, before the foundation of the world, the cross was not the backup plan. The cross was the number one plan. This is what God was going to do to reconcile us to himself and show us what real love was all about. So when I get into I can take you into New Mexico and the cab of a truck, a U-Haul that I was driving from Colorado Springs down to Tucson. And I can take you to a moment in the road where it was as low as I could get with all the things that were going on, you know, and everybody has a dip in the road. And I think it was near Elephant Butte, to be honest with you, which is not the most glorious place in New Mexico, but it was for me. it was just this place where God kind of met me there and said, keep walking, keep going, keep struggling well, because struggle is not the evidence of failure. Struggle is evidence of life. And I've come to give you life. I'm going to give you abundant life. It's not going to look like what you thought it was going to look like. Go with me, walk with me, and we'll get in a boat with you. He got in the U-Haul that night, early in the morning, and I want to. That's how I want to live, and I want to help others see the possibility, no matter where they are.
So good. We're going to pause here. I'm talking to Chris Fabry, award-winning novelist, national radio host, father of nine. Can you believe it? I've got five copies of this beautiful book, Overcomer. It's a novelization of the film that will drop on August 23rd. Very important that Christians get to the theater on that weekend. The film needs to do well on that first weekend for theaters to carry it. Five copies to give away. Tell me how you've overcome. Kristen said, God helped me overcome breast cancer, complete seven marathons, and finish my doctorate in education. Wow. She said, I've been able to share with everyone how big God is, bigger than anything. Text or email your testimonies. Include your address if you want in on the drawing, 877-933-2484, or email middays@myfaithradio.com. Back in a minute. Thanks for tuning in to Middays. I'm Susie Larson talking to my friend Chris Fabry. He's a national radio host. He's a best-selling, award-winning author, and he's written a novelization of the Kendrick Brothers' new film that drops in a few weeks, Overcomer. We've got five copies to give away. Why don't you text or email to get in on the drawing? I would love to hear your testimony of what God's helped you overcome. But either way, enter the drawing. You can text 877-933-2484 or email middays@myfaithradio.com. Chris, when did the Kendrick Brothers first approach you about yet another novelization of one of their films?
Well, it kind of happened during when he had War Room, and I worked on that, and it was such an organic thing that we went back and forth. Alex does a lot of the novelization work with me and gives me the, you know, go ahead with this, that, or the other thing. And so I knew that they probably would come back because it was such a good experience during War Room, but I didn't know when. And it was probably a late spring, maybe in June of last year, that I got a phone call with Alex and some other folks on the line. And he said, I just want to see if you'd like to write this story. And so let me explain it to you. And so what he did was, in a very matter-of-fact way, here's the first scene of the film. There's a drone shot that comes into the basketball court and comes into the scene, and here's what's happening on the court. And the coach is doing this, and the players are doing this, and this is what happens at the game. Now, what you don't know when that is happening is that in the town, this is, you know, and so he just goes matter-of-factly through each of the screen, the shot by shot by shot of the film. And there are moments in there, just like when you read a film script, it can just kind of lay there, you know, just the words on the page, and you move through it. But as he is describing this, it's like, I can see it. I can see what's happening. This old woman, you know, in her prayer room up on the second floor of her house, when he described War Room, I could see it in my head. And it's like, by the time he got to the end, I had tears in my eyes. I was cheering for what was going on that he was talking about. And I could see some of the response. And then, you know, the overarching idea of this whole thing is, who are you really? And who gets to define who you are? And they really believe, the Kendricks, and I do too, that God is the ultimate one who can define who you are. And with everything that's going on in the culture, with how crazy everything is about identity, with gender identity, sexual identity, and all of the confusion that's going on in the culture, and even in the church, this is the message that we really need to hone down on for this generation and the older generation as well.
Amen. Well, give us a synopsis, if you would, of this story.
basically it's about, you think the first thing you think is it's about a coach, because, you know, Alex, they love sports. He's a basketball coach. He's very successful. I got to write about some of the backstory of the John Harrison who Alex plays. And basically his team almost, well, I won't say too much about what happens in the first shot, but that drone shot that comes onto the basketball court, they're really good and they're playing a really good team. So what happens is the town around it, the biggest manufacturer, pulls out of the town. And so the school that the coach is involved with, a lot of the sports teams have to be taken away. You know, they don't have enough for the football team. They don't have enough for what's going on. And they tap him to coach cross country. And he doesn't want to coach cross country. It's not a real sport to him. You know?
Remember, he said that this isn't even a real sport as he's dying. Anyway, keep going.
Alex's kids, they have six children, I believe, and most of his children have run cross country. So he knows, you know, the ins and outs of the sport. And so you think as you're watching this, oh, this is about the coach. This is about the coach getting his identity from being state champion or, you know, being really successful. And then you see the only person on the team is this little 15-year-old girl, and you're going to fall in love with Hannah. And she's got asthma. You know, it feels like, well, no, this is who it is, because she's got some struggles in her life and she's got some real issues of things that are holding her back. And then you meet this fella who is in a hospital bed. It's just a quote unquote chance meeting that John, who's going on visitation with his pastor, he just happens to stumble into this room. And you see this fella who is chained to, not literally, but with all the cables that he has, you know, to keep him alive. He can't get out of bed. You know, where does he get his identity from? So you've got all of the people and then the ancillary characters around who are asking the same question. Who am I? What do I get my worth from? Where does that come from? Is it success? And if I win the race or win the state championship, basketball, all that, you know, is that what I'm really looking for? Because I can point you, Susie, to a lot of people who've been very, very successful in whatever they put their hand to, and they still are running. They're still on that treadmill of success. So that's the story, is basically who these people really are. And then there, with every Kendrick film, you see very clearly how to have a relationship with God. I can take you to the, you know, this is not supposed to work. You can't do this on a major motion picture. And this film is, they're getting, like you said, that my novels are getting better. Their films are getting better and better. Yeah. The quality is getting better. The cameras that they're shooting with, you know, everything is getting better. But there's a point in this film where you see a character reading the first two chapters of Ephesians. You can't do that in Hollywood. There's no way that you can do that, but it works. It works because you understand the longing inside the human heart to know, who am I really? So I think every believer who walks in is going to encounter, you know, what I've just talked about in a real powerful way, in a biblical way. But anybody who's not a Christian, not a follower of Jesus, it's a great story. You'll want to stand up and cheer, but you're also going to encounter that question for you. Who are you really? What does God say about who you are? Is that important to you? Are you going to let that come into your life? And so I'm looking forward to what will happen, both in the theater or anybody who reads the novelization of this.
You know, I typically have one of the Kendrick brothers on right before a film drops, and then usually about 8, 9, 10 months later, just to hear testimonies. And I can't remember if it was Alex or Steven this time, but it was after War Room, I believe. But they were saying before War Room, Sony had made a commitment to them because of the success of Courageous. So you picture these two brothers sitting on this couch in this giant Sony office, you know, and they're like, well, we've made a commitment to you, you know, what's your next idea? And they're like, well, this African-American older woman who's got a prayer closet. And these guys are like, really? and they said, well, okay, you can't win them all. We've made a commitment to you. All right, well, you know, we'll back you, but this is not going to fly. And they said, well, at least let us give you one of our A-list African-American actresses. And they're like, no, we've got our girl. well, who is it? Well, Priscilla Shire. They're like, never heard of her. Well, she's a Bible study teacher. And they just go on to explain, you know, their vision and that they've got Priscilla. And these guys are like, okay. And they couldn't see how it would work. And War Room was this smashing success. And then the guys come in under budget and send the leftover money back to Sony.
Yes.
And
yes.
Sony has never seen anything like this. And I just think these guys keep, they're like phenomena, you know, just because they keep breaking molds and records. And but it's just the hand of God and their humility, but their excellence too. I mean, it's just an amazing thing to watch.
Yeah, it is. I heard the same story from a person who was there from Sony. And she said, I went into all of this stuff and I didn't, you know, I'd read the Bible before, I'd been to church before. But seeing this just caused this hunger in me. And she talked about her marriage and what was going on with her kids at the time. And she said, I just, to her family, I really would like to see us get into church again. And she just kind of told, it was all because of the exposure to the films that they'd had. But you're exactly right. Sony said, this is not going to work. Go ahead and do what you want to do. You know, pick you up by the shoulders after you've fallen over, because this is going to flop. And it didn't, because of the depth of the story. And that's why I love Overcomer. I said to Alex, look, you guys are staying in your lane. You're not trying to do this big budget superhero, you know, all of the explosions and all that kind of stuff. You're staying with a very small story about a character, and you're going deeply into that character's life so that we can see ourselves, because that's what a good film will do. It's what a good book will do. It will come around to the back door of your heart and knock and say, hey, this is you. You're looking at your own life here. So I look forward to hearing some of those stories come out of Overcomer that came out of War Room.
Well, the nuances in that and the Overcomer, we got to watch it early, my hubby and I. And I, of course, laughed. I cried. There's times we were like, oh, just because they would slip in little moments of what it looks like to make a marriage work, just little things like that. And you know, we got probably about a minute before our hard break here, Chris. But I got to know, did you watch an early version of the film before you started writing? Or did you really have to picture it based on the script? Or how did you do that?
They gave me the rough cut. So it was probably about an hour longer than what you have seen, with all of the jump cuts and everything, no music in there and that kind of stuff. And so I'm seeing what's on the wall of the 15-year-old. What does she put on her wall behind her bed? And then the questions come, why'd she put that there? And what's that horse doing there? I haven't seen her ride a horse. Why is the, you know, ask all those questions. What's she wearing here? Why is that shirt? Why is she wearing that in that scene? And trying to imagine that and pulling that from it. Yeah. So that I don't start writing until I've seen as much as I can see.
All right. We're going to pause here. I'm talking to Chris Fabry today. He wrote the novelization of the film Overcomer, which again drops in a few weeks. Please get out and see it. We've got 5 copies. I'm guessing this is about 130,000 word book. Is that right?
More like 90.
Oh, wow. It's so thick. I'm still impressed. Anyway, 5 copies. You can text or email to get in the drawing, 877-933-2484, or email middays@myfaithradio.com. More with Chris Fabry in just a moment. Thanks for tuning in to Middays. I'm Susie Larson. Really honored to have you listening today. My friend Chris Fabry joins me. He is a national radio host and a best-selling author. He's written a number of books in his own right, but he also writes some of the novelizations for the Kendrick Brothers. The new film, Overcomer, comes out in a few weeks. Chris has written the novel, the companion novel. We've got 5 copies to give away. I'm excited about that. You can enter the drawing just by sending your address, but I would love to know what you've overcome, if you don't mind sharing. 877 933 2484. You can text or email middays@myfaithradio.com. This dear listener says, day by day, I'm being taught how to overcome fear. God has used his past presence, provision, and grace to show me that he's faithful. He's good. He's in control. He loves every single detail about me and my life. That's beautiful. I'm awestruck by his intimate personal interest in me and his desire to see fear being uprooted and discarded in my life. Fantastic. Thanks for sharing. Chris, as you're writing these different books, especially these films that you're working so closely with the Kendrick Brothers on, how does God move in your own life? Because even like with the idea of identity, don't you feel like we acquire that in layers or in phases or stages where it's like God sets the plow a little bit deeper? How did that happen and how did that work for you?
Well, I went through Ephesians 1 and 2 for several months, you know, alternating the first and the second chapter. And I had to photocopy those pages in my Bible because I knew I was going to wear it out because there are things in there day by day that God would continue to show me. But this whole thing is not just an intellectual or a Bible study thing. It's got to sink down deeply. And I had been doing some work on that whole identity thing, you know, in the year prior. And it was, as I look back at some of the novels that I've written, the stories that I've written, you know, the story Junebug that I wrote. Well, a little girl is walks into Walmart. She travels around the country with her dad in an RV. The RV breaks down in a Walmart parking lot. She walks into Walmart. She looks up at the missing children poster and she sees herself. So that's the first page of Junebug. The rest of the novel is answering the question, who am I? Who is he? Is this really my dad? Or is this somebody who's abducted? You know, what is going on here? So almost every story that I have written through the years, when I look back, it's about this subject of who am I really? And if I know who I am really, am I going to live out of that truth or am I going to let something else supplant it? Because you get behind a microphone, Susie, and you have any kind of success, and you it's very easy to say, well, I am somebody because people listen to me on the radio, or I am somebody because I get to talk with fill in the blank of the famous person that you've talked with, and that you gain your identity by how many people follow you on Facebook or Twitter or whatever it is these days that they follow you on. And you put your identity into that. I am somebody because blank. And if you fill that blank in with anything other than Jesus paid the debt that I could not pay, and he commended his love to me, and I am part of his family in not in just, you know, getting in the room, but in good standing. I am perfect in the sight of a holy God because of what Jesus did for me. Unless you fill in the blank with that, anything else, as good as it might be, you know, having a bestseller, you lean on anything else and it will always bring you up short. You will feel empty. I tell this to people who, you know, talk about writing. I remember the years and years that I dreamed about. I spent years in the 808 section of the public library that was nearby. I would have camped out over there, you know. Glad they let me check the books out. But I just had this dream to write. Finally, my first book came out. It was 1995. My very first book came out. And I took the family over to the publisher in Downers Grove, Illinois, and they handed me a couple of boxes of books, and I opened it up and I pulled it out, and there it is, the thing that I wanted. And my first thought was, I wonder when the second one will be out. I wonder when I write another one. It's like this insatiable desire will not be assuaged by publication. There is something deeper that's going on. And Overcomer, I'll be honest, Overcomer is my 81st book published. Wow. And so I tell you, you can get on a treadmill and you can gain, you know, the whole world and lose your soul. You can gain a lot of publishing identity, but lose who you really are unless you allow God to fill in the blank.
Yeah, you sure can see how you shift your weight on laurels, accomplishments, achievements. It's the very place that the enemy will attack you. It's the very place where if your weight is on that, then it carries weight when someone sees different. differently, sees you, you know what I mean, through a critical filter, because that's the basis by which you're defining yourself. So how have you navigated that, Chris? You've got a pretty significant platform. How do you process both the praise and the critiques, especially those that maybe aren't so fair?
Well, I go back to when I, you know, get those hard comments, or when something happens that I hadn't planned, you know, when I don't get tapped to do the book, or when I had a situation where I was doing a program and this came to an end. So what do you do with that? You know, how do you deal with the not seeing that as a failure, or seeing that as, oh, I'm not worth anything now, or I'm not worthy now, I'm less than because I don't have this responsibility that was taken away from me. And I've been on the radio long enough and talking about this stuff long enough that I have a significant amount of words coming back to me and saying, look, you, if you talk to other people who have been going through bad patches, as it's not your circumstances that defines you, it's what, how you respond to it, the opportunity that God gives you to respond to the negative and the positive. If I don't look at that and say, you know what, God's got something here, I don't understand it, I feel I can lament the loss, you know, I can lament the struggle that I'm going through and go through it authentically, but at the same time claim, I believe in his scripting here, in his plotting of my life, P-L-O-T, not P-L-O-D, his plotting of my life's story. And I'm going to lean into that and say, there's something good on the other side of this. I know I can't see it, but I trust him, just like Abraham trusted him when he grabbed his son by the hand, or however that worked, and went up the mountain.
Mm-hmm. Well, take us behind the scenes. You said you visited the site, the set, as they were filming Overcomer. Tell us what you saw, what you learned.
I walked into a room, and this is what, in your flesh, you always do this. You know, there's all these people from the film, there's all these people from the distributor, and people who are visiting the set that day, and you think, I wonder who the most important person is here. I wonder who, you know, who is it? You know, you think about that. And I found her. I found the most important person. Her name's Brenda. She's the prayer coordinator for the Kendricks. And she literally gets people from around the country and around the world praying every day for you. And it'll be shooting this scene, and here are the struggles, and we've got a weather situation that might, you know, affect things. And she just has people praying all around the world for what's going on the set. And she is able to, she asked me, you know, how can we pray for you? I think Brenda was the one who had read one of my novels and said to the Kendricks, hey, this guy might, you might try this guy out. So I am very appreciative and grateful for her to be able to kind of put me on their radar. But the other thing that happened is, behind the scenes, you hear about the stuff that, you know, the shooting that is bathed in prayer. There are moments when they'll stop shooting and they'll say, you know, this is really a pivotal thing. Let's just bring this to God right now. And they pause, and, you know, with all of the expensive stuff that's going on. The other thing that happened, though, that I didn't expect, there was a fellow who was driving us around to the different places, you know, to get from the shuttle, from the airport. This was in Georgia, so we had to fly into Atlanta and drive south to Columbus. And he was getting us one place to another. And as we were going to the shuttle, at the end of the shoot, at the end of my being there for a couple of days, there was a fellow named Joe and a fellow named Brian. And I saw Stephen come out of the room. And I just, you know, I'm always nervous about getting to the airplane on time so I can get home. And I saw Stephen grab them both and pull them into kind of a bear hug, put his arms around their shoulders, and all three of them closed their eyes and bowed their heads. And I thought, what in the world is going on? What do I not know? And what I didn't know was, both Joe and Brian had lost their spouses in the last several months. And they were coming to that, see, they'd been on set for other films, but they were coming with half of their heart torn out, you know, just the real struggle. And the Kendricks knew this. And I think it was Stephen who said to Brian, doesn't your daughter, doesn't she run track? And he goes, yeah. He said, well, we're shooting a scene. Why don't we have her come up? He's from Florida. And he said, well, wouldn't that be great? Now, Brian told me later on that he's the kind of guy who does not do things on the spur of the moment. That was his wife was always that way. She was just like, see an opportunity. He has to have everything mapped out, everything planned out. But he thought this will honor her memory and it will give my daughter a chance. There is a scene, the very last scene of the film is you do not know what is going on behind the scenes, but you see a runner way out in front, and behind this runner, there are several runners. And I know which one is Brian's daughter who is running in that scene, who flew up. He went, got on the shuttle. He went and got her, took her down. She was able to be in the film. She's not credited. There's nothing in there, but that was this little glimpse of grace behind the scenes that is, that permeates everything that these guys do. It just, it brings a tear to my eye because you don't know all of the things that go into, you know, a film like this. And I was so glad that I got to see that and to talk with Brian on the shuttle, you know, going back to Hartsfield and to hear more of the story and the journey that he and his family have been through.
Man, I asked the Kendrick brothers this question. I'd love to ask you as well. But, you know, you think about their passion and their humility, and you share the same, Chris. But the enemy hates that. I mean, there's definitely a target on their backs and on your back because you're stepping in to a realm of, you know, of media that the enemy wants so much to occupy. And I don't believe there's a demon behind every bush. I really subscribe to C.S. Lewis's opinion that the two errors are too much obsession and then too much ignorance. That, you know, spiritual warfare is real. And talk about, if you would, just any kind of opposition you walked through and how you navigated that as you were writing this book.
I felt more of that with War Room because honestly, because of the prayer effect of, you know, you're stepping into onto the battlefield, you know, with that. With this book, I felt like with it being the second project that I'd done with them, I felt like the bigger struggle for me was with the flesh, my own flesh, doing this in my own strength. You know, just telling a good story and getting the characterization down. The way that I like to put it is the Kendricks give me the fence posts and I get to run in the pasture and just play and ask questions. And I can do that in such a way that is that I lean on, you know, things I've done before and just telling it, being able to tell a good story. And I knew that there was more to this, that there has to be, you have to be able to read more between the lines and to make it subtle in the approach, because you can bang people over the head with truth, bang them over the head with, you know, you've got to get this concept down, or you can put it in a way that they are participants in the story. And so that's where I felt it more this time, that it, I did not want to lean on my own understanding, but acknowledge him in all of my ways so that he would make the path of this novel straight and not crooked. So that's what I experienced.
Very good. We're going to pause for our last break. When we come back, Chris, I want to know, just I've been asking our listeners, been getting some really great texts about things that they've overcome. Maybe a few landmarks in your life of ways that you've overcome by the grace of God. Some know your story, others may not. So whatever you feel led to share, we'd love to hear. Talking to Chris Fabry, we've got 5 copies of his new novel, Overcomer, to get into your hands. Please enter the drawing, 877-933-2484. You can text. Don't forget that mailing address. We don't share it with anybody. We just need it to mail your book. Or email middays@myfaithradio.com. We'll be back in a minute. Thanks so much for tuning in to Middays. I'm Susie Larson. Honored to have you listening today, talking to my friend Chris Fabry. He's a national radio host, best-selling author, and he's just written the novelization of the film, the new Kendrick Brothers film that comes out in 3 weeks. And I can't stress this enough. I was interviewing Stephen Kendrick just a few weeks ago, and he talked a lot about really the success of the film really is based on that first weekend. It's August 23. Please mark your calendar. Get out to see the film. I've already seen it. It's amazing, but theaters will respond to how it does on that box office weekend. Chris has written the novelization of Overcomer, and we've got five copies to get into your hands. 877-933-2484 or email middays@myfaithradio.com. Chris, as I said, some know your story. I mean, what you guys have walked through. Others do not. But I would love for you, as much as you're comfortable, sharing a little bit of your backstory of just places where you felt like you didn't know that you would overcome, but looking back over your shoulder, you indeed have overcome.
Yeah. The first thing that came to my mind is one of the characters in the novel experiences this about what it would be like to live really believing that he, she is forgiven. Live loved, that's how the person puts it. And I think to the extent that I have failed to live loved, then I have not overcome. You know, I'm looking for love, not from God's love and his identity, but from other validation or other people. So living loved helps you overcome. What you're talking about is what happened to us in Colorado. And I would frame it this way. I have overcome this defining success as life working out the way that I thought it ought to work out. Faith is not believing God for what I want him to do in my life. It's believing God to conform me to the image of his son, period, exclamation point, maybe. and I have lived thinking that faith is being able to figure out what God is doing in the hard times or immediately after. I want the Joseph experience, thrown in the pit, sold into slavery, unjustly put into prison, and then comes to power and is able to save his whole family, and it all works out. And you understand, well, it works out into slavery again, but you know, at all in his life, he could figure it out. God, you know, you meant it for evil, God meant it for good. And my thought about that or construct is faith is me being able to figure out what God has done, put all the puzzle pieces together so that it all fits and I understand it. And I had to let God off the hook for me to understand it and realize he's God and I'm not. So a few years ago in Colorado, everything crumbles. We moved into this house that we thought would be the one that we would, you know, always live in and die in. And we almost did. The house, our health, our finances, our pets, everything crumbled. And the New Mexico trip that I was just talking about, in the back of that U-Haul was all of these mattresses that we had bought, and some were donated to us to take down to a place that we were renting. We were thinking we were going to get better. We unload all these mattresses, put them in a house that had just had pesticides sprayed inside. We were chemically sensitive because of the thing that happened up in Colorado. So even the stuff that I dragged down to Arizona in order to, you know, let us sleep on the floor, we had to leave those behind. I mean, it was just this horror story for us. And a lot of people, you can compare, a lot of people have worse things happen to them. But for us, you know, to have 9 kids and
lose everything
and be sleeping. We had, I think there were 7 at one point. We had a 3-bedroom rental, and one of those rooms was my office where I was doing my radio show from. And the main master bedroom, there were 7 of us in that one room, and we got really close with our kids in that experience. But I say that not to say for you to say, oh, as you poor people, and it must have been really, really hard. It's like, I still don't know why God dragged us through all of that, but I have enough faith in his sovereign, loving hand, his hand of hesed, to believe that he was leading us even there. Michael Carr, I don't know if you've talked with him about his inexpressible book about Hesed. He says this: what kind of confidence might be born in our hearts and minds if we trusted that God's love, mercy, and kindness will never fail, never leave us in the lurch? What would happen to our deepest lingering fears if we could summon the audacity to believe this promise, a promise that obviously meant so much to Israel, and that is that God, you can trust him. Give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. His love, his hesed, endures forever. And so that's how I would answer that question of the whole figuring it out. I don't have to figure it out. I need to let go of my, you know, need to figure it out, because figuring it out is not faith.
To think, though, you moved, you know, 9 kids, you're this massive family where you all had to drive away from your home and all of its contents except for your mattresses, which you ended up having to leave anyway. You basically were homeless until you found your rental, but that still wasn't your home. That, to me, is such a marvel. And you've navigated that, Chris, with, I mean, everybody was watching. People who knew you were watching. And I look at you guys now. You're still standing. You know, you're still proclaiming Christ. And it makes me think of the passage, what we suffer now is nothing compared to the glory that will be revealed to us later. And it hasn't been wasted on you. And I just wonder what God's going to show you on the other side of it. And I don't even know that you would be the same writer or radio host had you not gone through it, even though we don't understand it, you know?
And that's one of the things came out of this is, you know, we are stewards of our time, talent, and treasure. I get that. Steward of my time, steward of the, you know, finances, whatever God gives me, the kids, the wife, spouse, the treasure that I have. We're also stewards of pain. We're stewards of the pain that God allows into our lives. So steward that well as something that he can use both in and he can work through. That's one of the major lessons that I've learned over the last few years.
What do you know about God now that you didn't know 5-10 years ago?
That he's willing to get in the boat. That, you know, and I think it's the same thing, because Jesus told them to get in the boat and go, you know, they were following everything he told them to do. Go, you do this, go across, and the waves come and the wind, it's there. The sovereign hand of God told them, do this. They obeyed him, and look what happened to them. And so there are times when I've disobeyed, times when I've made big mistakes, and that's why the water's choppy. But there are some times that God allows you to go through these real struggles, and he's right there. He wants to show you, I'm getting in the boat with you. My love is here with you. Don't despair. I am here. So I think that's one of the main things that I've learned throughout that time.
Did you have to work at not bracing for impact? I mean, did it take you a while after walking through such an extended, painful crisis? I mean, really, your kids, I think all of them, if not most of them, were impacted, not to mention you and your wife's health. I mean, did you go through times where you were just bracing for impact, even though you loved God, you didn't fully trust that another shoe was going to fall? Did it take you time to get to a place of freedom where you weren't worried about that?
It's triggers, you know, good. So walking in the mailbox, because I grew up with parents who, you pay your bills, you get this done. And because of the health insurance waffling and the questions, we didn't want to pay certain bills because we figured they wouldn't be paid. And so we were getting these notices in the mail and things that just, you know, and I was just afraid to go to the mailbox. And you're afraid to take your kids to church because they come back after the chemical sensitivity and somebody wears too much perfume and you're out the whole day. And are we going the right road? You know, are we treating all of those types of things just debilitate you? And to the point where it takes time to walk through it. I tell you, the hardest thing for me was to get a dog. Our dog is Tebow. And it took a long time for me to get the courage to hit the send button, you know, to hit the pay button, to get a dog in the house because of the trauma that we had been through and the way that I felt like I let our pets down, you know, in the house that we were in. So he has brought an awful lot of life. And now my wife is talking about having outdoor cats. So I'm, you know,
you must be recovering. This is so good. How can we pray for you, Chris?
Oh, to be faithful and to be a good steward of the pain, I think is a wonderful thing, you know, to keep walking, and whatever God gives me, that's usually the verse that I give is Colossians 3, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, that I'd be faithful to do that, work at it with all my heart and the relationships that I have, to really make those the most important thing rather than the achievements and all the accolades that you can run after.
We sure love and appreciate you, Chris. Thank you for the time today.
Thank you, Susie. God bless you.
And you as well. That's Chris Fabry, friends. His book, Overcomer, The Drawing, will stay open for another 10, 15 minutes. So text if you want to get in, 877-933-2484, or email middays@myfaithradio.com. Special thanks to Ted Ross for producing today. And Carissa, appreciate you so much. And you, my dear listener, love and appreciate you. And we'll meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to this Middays with Suzy Larson podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of Middays with Suzy Larson.